So it is January 12th, 2018, and this is Molly Kellogg, and this is the, I guess you'd say, winter roundtable counseling call. And this is not a formal seminar in any way. It's really just an informal gathering. The overall topic is the counseling process in a nutrition care setting. And people can chime in as they want with both questions or struggles, but also hopefully with positive things, things that are going well. I'll first just share my upcoming calendar. For those of you interested in attending any of my trainings, I'll be in Dallas next weekend, though registration is already passed for that. That's my two-day motivational interviewing training. I will also be doing that training in Phoenix the first weekend in February. I'll be at the North Carolina Dietetic Association on March 2nd. I'll be in Atlanta with the WIC program, Georgia WIC program, in the end of March. April 8th, I'll be at the Virginia Dietetic Association. And then I will be doing my two-day motivational interviewing training in L.A. May 4th and 5th, and in Charlotte, October 5th and 6th. I will probably be in Denver in September, but don't quote me yet. I haven't got it totally firmed up, but you might, if you're in that area interested in Denver, you might want to make a note of that, but I'll probably be there in September. I'll go up on my website when it's firmed up. So what we're going to do is people can chime in, and what I would like you to start with is just sharing your favorite MI skill, whatever that is, skill or technique. And then if you'd like to bring up a concern or question, you could. It's also fun to use these calls to share any new resources you've run into. So, who would like to start? Well, they're sort of reticent today. Anybody have any exciting thing that's happened in their counseling process recently where they used an MI skill and it went really well? Anybody want to share that kind of thing?
Molly?
Yes.
Hello.
Yes.
I don't have
your
a
name?
Success. Maria Carell.
Hi.
I was wondering, this is a question more about a resource.
Mm-hmm.
I just happened to come across a client recently at a with a very unique eating disorder, if you will, nonspecific, I believe. She was a very picky eater as a child,
mm-hmm.
and now that has carried on as into her adulthood.
Mm-hmm.
She has OCD, and I was just wondering if you know of a good resource of how to help her. I mean, she has very limited food intake. Basically,
mm-hmm.
she's eating like a five-year-old.
So it's probably hard to distinguish whether this is entirely OCD or whether there's also some actual sensitivities, texture sensitivities, for example,
well,
or something like that.
There is some of that, too. She did express that to me, reported that you know, she can only handle very specific, very soft foods. But now she's like,
does she also have a therapist?
She does, and she's being seen for other things, so nobody's addressing the eating, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. Well, I certainly would speak with her therapist, get permission from her to speak with her therapist and make sure that if they're working on the OCD, whether it's primarily the obsessive thoughts or whether it's compulsive, compulsive behaviors, that they realize that they're issues around how she handles food as well. And then if there really are sensitivity issues that date way back, with kids, I always think of working with an OT, because occupational therapists, that's one of the things they tend to specialize in. I'm wondering if anyone else on the call, though, has experience with this kind of case and wants to chime in.
The other thing I was going to ask was, would a eating disorder program, but most of the, what I see is that they're working mostly with binge eating and anorexic. I don't know that they would handle program somebody like this.
They might. If indeed this is a an eating disorder that is really secondary to OCD, it might not fit very well for someone like that to be in an eating disorder program where they're, right. Most of the people have body image distortion and things like that as well.
Right.
If you have a good program in your area, though, and the client is game, it's worth a try to suggest that they go for an assessment, you know? Because any of these programs do assessments, and they generally do those for free. So it's worth the try if the client's game.
Okay. But does anybody on the call have any experience with this? Or?
Yeah, does anybody else have any ideas for Maria?
Hello, this is Dave Wiley.
Hi.
I'm also seeking to be I'm actually in the middle of taking my final for physical fitness. But I was listening to the caller and her client who's experiencing eating disorders and wondering if she's experiencing any other chronic kind of disease.
Yeah, and it sounds like this is something that's been long-standing for this person.
Yes, and it wasn't. I don't think it was addressed for her as a child, and now she's an adult and wants to, you know, understands that this is problematic for her. You know, she wants to change, but
right, yeah. Well, it does sound like approaching it from the point of view of it being OCD. I mean, there are therapists who specialize in that,
and
there are all sorts of behaviors and thought patterns that OCD tends to attach itself to, and eating is one of them. Well, good luck.
Yeah, okay.
Sure, yeah. So who else wants to share? I'd love to have someone share any positive things or, you know, for those of you who get my tips, I think you probably all do, you may have noticed that last time I asked for people to send in the things they appreciate that MI has provided to them. And I've gotten lots of wonderful responses. And I'm wondering if anybody on the call wants to express appreciation for what motivational interviewing skills have done for their practice.
I could chime in,
sure.
If you'd like. This is Kathy. I have found that using reflection and reflecting back what you hear is incredible. It just allows your client partner to open up, and what you both realize is that they know their path, like, much clearer than they want to admit or that you understand. And then the goals start just tumbling out. And it's the beauty of it is that it's their goals, and it came from their own reflection. I mean, I'm the MI tool of mirroring, I guess, which, you know, just brings out the a client's own personal realizations. So I can't emphasize that enough. It's just simply reflecting back is like the most powerful tool.
It is amazing, isn't it? Yeah. Anybody else want to jump in?
I can jump in. My name's Mary Ann. I work at the University of Vermont Medical Center. I think that affirming works really well. Like, I don't know, sometimes I heard a colleague, a physician's assistant, like, affirm something when we were on rounds, and thinking to myself, I wasn't thinking of that affirmation, but it was just saying to somebody, yeah, that must be really hard, and it just it just opens their heart, you know. Where all of a sudden they feel heard, and it's just something that I need to sort of, you know, it just struck me that, like, yeah, I need to remember to kind of do that more often.
Yeah. Yeah, that is cool, Marianne, when you notice somebody else doing something. And for one thing, you were able to label it as affirming.
Oh, yeah. And I actually mentioned we're trying to have these little motivational interviewing meetings, like, you know, once a month. And I mentioned that to him yesterday. And he was like, thank you for telling me that. And when every time you notice something like that, say it, you know, later. So that, oh,
exactly.
Yeah, that was really good.
Yeah, so you affirmed him for affirming.
Yeah.
Cool.
That's right.
Absolutely. And that is indeed one of the perfect times to practice affirming yourself, is to, whenever you notice, well, whether it's a client or a colleague who is making a wonderful effort or has a strength or something, go ahead and affirm it. Yeah, cool. Any others?
Hi, this is Vinci, and I'm from Calgary, Canada.
Hello, Vinci.
Hi. I totally agree with Marianne that I find affirming super powerful, and I don't know if it's partly because it's something that doesn't necessarily come naturally to me. Like, I'm one of those people who's not good at receiving compliments or giving compliments, and affirming sometimes feels like giving a compliment. And so it's something that I've been, like, actively really working on, and I do see how impactful it was. Like, I had a client whom I affirmed. She was a bit, like, perfectionistic and was just like, feeling like she wasn't, you know, achieving what the changes that she wanted to make. And so I affirmed her, you know, resilience and problem solving skills, because every time we talk about something, you know, she comes up with some ideas that she'd be open to trying. And like, she kind of, you know, was like a little stunned almost when I said it, and was just kind of like, you know, no, thank you for saying that. No one has ever said that to me before. So affirming is very powerful and something that I'm trying to be more conscious of doing.
Yeah. And that client was able to take it in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And my guess is, Vinci, is that when you said it to her, you said it as a fairly straightforward sort of statement of fact. Because it can be tempting with someone like that, who's a perfectionist, to sort of get into an argument with them. But look, you've done this or whatever. And when we do it with that kind of tone, it sort of encourages the person to argue the other side of it.
Yeah.
And when we just say, you know, what we've observed, that this is what you used to be doing and now this is what you're doing, or just whatever it is, in a fairly straightforward way, the affirmation is actually more effective.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. Malia, this is Maria calling back. I use affirmation with clients in a mental health, and I just find that really boosts their self-esteem too. When I say something like, you know, I see that you're really trying to make some changes, or I go back and I say, look at all the changes that you have made, and we go through them. You know, you're not eating out as often, or you're cooking one meal a day, and they start to acknowledge it, and it just really very empowering for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and these are people you work with on an ongoing basis.
Yes, acknowledging. Yeah.
Right. And often it is very small steps, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you can affirm them. Absolutely.
Yeah, and right, but it's like sometimes they don't see it. They don't see their success.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's incredibly common. There's something about our brains that it's very easy for us to sort of keep moving on and not look back and not see how far we've come. So simply pointing that out to them.
Is that a good thing to just continue to point that out to them that they're making success?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
While noticing the client's response, particularly with clients you get to know, because, you know, there may be some people that it begins to feel like too much or something, you'd be able to pick that up, though, and then you dial it back a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's some people who just lap up all of that that you can possibly do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Anybody else on affirming or any of the other MI skills?
Yeah. Hi, this is Catherine Haar. Hi, everyone. I had a similar situation where I was in a care plan meeting with a resident who was on a fluid restriction, and she was kind of asking why she needed to be on it and, you know, could she be taken off of it. And one of the nurses was kind of explaining clinically why it was necessary, but she didn't like that. So I said, you know, this must be really hard for you. And she was like, yes. And then we were able to talk about other things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That sort of caused you to step back a step with her and get on the same page with her and then possibly move forward. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Catherine is a relatively new RD. Is that right?
Yes. Yep. Coming up on 1 year.
Yeah, because she and I, Catherine and I worked together when she was a student. That's a great example. Anybody else want to bring anything up?
Hi, this is Heather. I'm in Florida.
Hi, Heather.
How are you? Happy New Year.
You too.
Okay, so this may be a simple question. I'm just curious what you guys do, if there's like a format or a template that you follow when you are speaking to a client for the first time. Like I typically, you know, promote that I'll do a 15-minute free consult just to, you know, answer any questions or whatever. I'm having trouble keeping it to 15 minutes. And I've had some situations where I've gone longer and then they either don't, you know, become a client. Like you can tell they should, but they don't become a client, and or they actually sign up for an appointment and then cancel. So I'm trying to make the most of my, like, 15-minute conversation with them. And I'm just curious if anything, what you guys do and if there's any kind of guiding rules, because I'm new too and I'm trying to make the most of my time.
That's a really good question, and you're talking about a specific type of contact, sort of in a sense, a sales contact, and also, I guess, you're willing to briefly engage with them and answer any questions they might have.
Right.
And hopefully have them continue with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I'm curious if I'm guessing there may be other people on this call who do those types of brief contacts. And does anybody have any ideas for Heather, particularly that idea that you have trouble ending it, you know, or tying it up? Anybody?
Does anyone not do that? Like, does anyone not offer some kind of call or, like, you know, what do you guys offer?
Mm-hmm.
Hi, this is Vinci again. I do initial calls like this. Mine are about 20 minutes long. I know some dietitians do a script, but I don't really. But what I have people do is when they first contact me, it's usually via email. So I'll have them kind of fill out a very short questionnaire that will have things like what made you decide to see a diet or to contact a dietitian or whatever it might be. And I start with using that email. So I will say something along the lines of, so you said in your initial email that you are looking for someone to help with your digestive concerns. Tell me more about that. So kind of starting with an open question and then using a lot of reflection with kind of what they're saying. And then how I do it is like, once you kind of get a sense of what they're sort of looking for, is I sort of kind of paint a picture of what working with me could look like. So, you know, if we're using the digestive concern example, I might say, okay, so yeah, so it definitely sounds like you are struggling with these digestive issues. You've tried these things and they haven't quite worked. Typically, what I would do with people is I would have them fill, like, kind of do a food and symptom record. And if you wanted me to, like, us to come up with a template together that would work, we could definitely spend some time talking about that. Once you do that for, you know, maybe a week or so, we'll come back, we'll take a look at it, and da-da-da-da-da. And so I think it's helpful when they kind of see a picture of what it can look like and how it could potentially, you know, address their concerns. That's when they're more likely to kind of jump in. And I think for me, like, not treating it as a sales call, even though that is what it is, and not putting that pressure on myself and thinking of it just as a shortened initial assessment. And then I, unless it's a very short question that can be addressed right away, like, I don't tend to answer a ton of questions on that call because I think that's what a lot of people try to do, and instead just say, you know, let's wait until we have the time to go further in depth with your concerns, and then I'll be able to give you, you know, a better, more personalized answer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what's your response to that, Heather?
Yeah, I think that where I probably need to just be more direct is to, you know, when they start the onslaught of questions, you know, is find a most appropriate moment and way to say, you know, that's a great question. I think that once we dig into the details and I know more about your situation, I would be able to, you know, provide a personalized answer. I think that's a really nice, polite, fair, political way to back out and stop answering questions, because I do think that they really want to just unload on you. And I don't know. I was just curious, like, if there was something that y'all do. But then that's definitely a good start.
Yeah, that I think Vinci has a sense of that, and obviously you have a fair amount of experience, Vinci. And notice, Heather, what one of the things that Vinci uses is a summary. She'll do, you know, a little bit of open-ended questioning, get some key points of what this person wants, and then do a summary of what she's heard. And then, as you say, paint a picture about how the two of you might work together. Summaries tend to help tie together and segue to the end of a call. It also hears, it sounds, Heather, like you like Vinci's idea of referring to what a great question. Yeah. Oh, that, or you have a lot of good questions. These are very important. These are the kinds of things I help people with, you know, that kind of thing. From a strictly sales, if you will, point of view, basically not answering any of the really specific questions in an initial call makes sense, unless there's specific questions about your fee or when your appointment hours are and, you know, that kind of thing. I'm not sure if we're answering your concern, Heather, are we?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good start. I think that, you know, I think just having that opportunity to back out by saying something along the lines of, I know more, I can answer that better, you know.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
I was going to say, obviously, you know, for those individuals that come to you and they do make an appointment and they back out to do a follow-up with them prior to the appointment, and also to give them homework. Let them think about the dream that they'd like to live in and bring that to you at the appointment. Give them something to look forward to and to bring forward rather than just show up.
Yeah, that works with some people, absolutely. It depends where they're at. Yeah, Heather, also, it of course, it's important for you to be clear about what you're offering in the phone call. It is a phone call, is it?
In this case, yes.
Yeah, it's a phone call, yeah.
Hi.
I'll give you a little, just to offer you sort of what I do. I don't have an official, like, I don't say to people, you know, you get to talk to me for 15 minutes first. I don't necessarily do that. But when people call to make an appointment, I'll say, you know, I'd be glad to make an appointment. I have a couple questions for you just to make sure I'm the right person for you. And I'll let you ask any questions you have about my practice. And I'll just ask a few really open type of questions. What caused you to call right now? What is it you're hoping I'll do for you? Things like that. And I'll listen, and I won't pursue it any further. Usually that's enough information for me to know whether I'm the right one for them. Because if it's really specific GI issues, for example, I don't do that. I have colleagues that I refer them to. Some of you may not work with eating disorders. So if it's an eating disorder, you may pick that up quickly and suggest a colleague for them. So a lot of it is what you promise them in the call.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And then I think, yeah, and then I think using summaries, I often also have trouble with people, you know, you do an open-ended question, people get all excited they're going to be able to talk a whole lot. So doing a little summary, like, wow, you're really concerned about all this, and you'd like to get an appointment as soon as you can to get moving on this, you know, that kind of summary. Anything, how are we doing, Heather? Is that
That's okay good. Either? It's good. Yeah.
Okay. Good. Any other ideas for Heather?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, great. My name is Ha. That's a really good question, Heather, because when I started my practice, I also was going back and forth about whether or not I should offer a 15-minute, like, free consultation. But I do spend time with clients. Like, I might get an email and say, like, hey, I would like to set up an appointment, and then I'll respond and say, do you have a few minutes to chat so I can see how I could help you? And then I'll spend, like, 10 minutes with them. And the same thing as Molly mentioned, I would just say, what are you looking for, or why did your doctor refer you? And I'll let them talk, but I won't go deep into it and keep asking them questions. And I'll say, okay, well, that's great. I think we'd be a good match because – and then I try to touch on those, like, pain points that they have that I work with clients with to show them how we can connect and how we can work together. And then that's about pretty much it. I just tell them what the first session is like, what they can expect, the handouts they get, what my principles are, and then we'll set up an appointment.
Okay. Yeah.
Is that helpful?
Yeah. Okay. That's good.
Yeah.
Great.
It's easy to feel like we have to give them so much right up front. So other things to share, questions to ask. We ended up talking about summarizing a little bit. Anybody happen to have any good
experience? I actually have something.
Sure.
My name is Stacy, and I am in Tucson, Arizona, and I just started prepping for your Phoenix course. So I'm kind of in the beginning stages and just working on the opening piece, and I generally feel pretty good about that. But I work for a tribe, and so I wear a couple of hats, and one of those is working at WIC. And my question is, I'm pretty good with interacting with patients, and I feel really comfortable when they've kind of sought me out or there's been a referral process. But when it comes to WIC, while I work with the high-risk folks, their intention is not exactly for the education piece, and so it's hard to kind of open a conversation other than just generally kind of checking in, where, you know, specifically with some of my younger moms at maybe 18, 19, you know, their just world experience isn't really there to realize that maybe there are things we could talk about for prepping before the baby gets there, for kind of what's your routine with eating and how do you want to promote healthy eating. And it's so hard to just begin that conversation because they really kind of feel like, nope, I'm good. Like, I'm all set. So I just love advice on that.
Well, I have several thoughts. One would be you might want to take a look at the tips I've written on resistance, because that's a type of resistance when somebody says, nope, I'm fine, you know. You have, or it'll be arriving in the mail momentarily, volume one of my practice workbook, and tip number 9 is in there.
Okay.
And that has some stuff on dealing with resistance. And also tip number 103 and 130 are both on my website in the archives, so you might want to take a look at those.
Okay.
I'm wondering what other perspectives or thoughts some people have. My guess is there's some people on this call who work for a WIC or used to. Any thoughts for Stacy? I'll toss some in then. WIC was my very first job. I've done a bunch of training with WIC staff. And it is tricky because there is the whole certification process, all the paperwork, and the clients are there mostly for the checks or vouchers or whatever they call them these days. And so it's very easy for the client not to be in a mode of, oh, I'm going to get some useful, good information here. Some WIC counselors do a little priming the pump. That's what I call it sometimes. First, by just engaging, especially with a teen. I mean, just, you know, the smiling, the chatting about something, you know, just small talk type stuff for a tiny bit. And then asking the classic "Am I open?" question, which is, if there were something about food and your pregnancy that concerns you, what would it be? Or if there were questions you had about feeding babies, what would it be? You know, that kind of very open. So you're making a suggestion that there might be a topic like, you know, the decision to breastfeed. If you had questions about this decision about breastfeeding or not, what would they be? Or you can just put it in that part of that sentence, any of the topics that you know you can help people with. And take it from there. The other way to do it is to do a list instead. You can say, you know, Jan, I know you're new to the WIC program, and so let me tell you some of the things that I help moms with. I help them make sure they gain enough weight and not more than they want to. I help them decide whether they're going to breastfeed. You know, you just list all that stuff. And then if there were one of these that would interest you, what would it be? Now, Stacy, I've wandered on for a bit.
No, actually, I think that's great, because I appreciate your first thoughts about kind of an open-ended question about if there were something you would want to work on, and sort of phrasing that depending on whether or not they're pregnant. And I have tried something similar, and that does work on occasion, but then I often get folks who just kind of, you know, aren't really sure what I'm getting at, and they're just kind of like, no. And so the list might actually be kind of great, a great way instead of, because I've really hesitated to jump in and be like, well, we did do a diet recall, so I can see these things, you know. So it might be good to offer them a list of like, well, these are the types of things that I have talked to other people about, and that we could discuss, you know, since you are coming on a monthly basis to see me, so we can we can work on some things.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and I'm hearing, Stacey, that you have the stance that you're wanting to, you know, not be punitive or critical or whatever. You
definitely
want the stance of I'm here to help you, right?
Especially because many of them, it's their first interaction with a dietitian, and the last thing I want to do is turn them off to it.
Absolutely, yeah. You want a good first dietitian impression. Yeah. Yeah, so thinking of it in terms of, what they might want, what they would get from it. And then also, there's the other part, particularly if they're very young, they really may be so clueless about, well, the fact that WIC is more than the food, you know, that it is an education program. So maybe a word or two about, you know, there are two aspects to this program. One is the food package that you're already familiar with. And the other part is that I'm here to help you be as healthy and happy as you can be nutrition-wise with this kid. So let's see how I can help you, you know, or something like that.
Right. Great.
Anyway, anything else, Stacey? And I'll look forward to seeing you in a few weeks.
Yeah, yeah. I'm looking forward to it as well.
Yeah, good. Other questions, concerns, fun things to throw in?
Hi, Molly.
Hi.
This is Lisa.
Hi, Lisa.
How are you?
All right.
I'm wondering if I can answer something along the lines of the resistance issues with MI.
Yeah.
That I'm struggling with a little bit, if that's okay.
Sure.
Okay, so I work in pediatrics, and we had, I believe he was about 12 or 13, who has prediabetes, and he's cared for by his grandmother. He also has non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. Kind of use some of the open-ended questions that I learned about through your workshop, but I got a lot of the I don't know or I don't care if I get diabetes, and grandmother kind of enables him. She has a hard time saying no to him, so like when he wants soda, he gets, you know, he gives it to him. So when I'm asking grandma, her thoughts about it, you know, she doesn't seem to, I don't know, when I asked her what she can do to help him, like she's not able to identify anything.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, like, I think she knows the relevance of it.
So. And she cares about him.
Yeah, she cares about him. She also has some health issues, so I think he helps take care of her, too. So I don't know if that's the dynamic of the hard time saying no, but she's kind of the one giving him soda. And when we kind of talked about that, she goes, well, he gets upset if I say no.
Yeah. This is a tough situation. That's a really tough age around there because, indeed, developmentally, they can seem pretty smart, and yet their brains have not developed to the point where they really do make the connection between what they eat now and, you know, an amputation by age 40 or, you know, whatever. So the kinds of things that where our minds go, they can't make that connection at that age. As a matter of fact, Lisa, you came to one of my workshops, did you?
Yes, in Seattle back in June.
Yeah, I don't know if I shared with you guys the interview that I did with Ellen Satter a number of years ago about this developmental issue and at what age you meet mostly with the parents and at what age you meet more with the kid.
Oh, yeah, you sent us a copy of
it. Yeah, I'd be glad to, for anybody on the call, I'd be glad, just email me and I'll send you a copy of it. But the basically the point is that when the younger kids, like underage, I don't know, 6 or 9 or something, it makes no point at all. There's no sense in meeting with the kid at all because the behavior changes are the ones that the parents are going to make. And then, of course, older teenagers, they're more independent. It's these in-between ones that are really tough. And I guess it makes sense to go back to the concept in MI about importance and confidence. So there's importance to make changes, and there's confidence to make changes. Now, you've had two different people, and the way they look at importance is going to be very different. So having a conversation between the three of you about what matters to you about this kid's health and his eating and whatever, and trying to evoke from the grandmother the things she knows, and hopefully he'll be listening, and then evoke from him what matters to him, which may include, I don't know, things, probably peer stuff, you know, wanting to eat what the other kids eat or something, you know, that would be classic for that age. And acknowledging all of what's there about importance. And I'm just sort of thinking out loud here. It doesn't make sense. Let me just finish the thought. And then it doesn't make sense to move on to the confidence and the problem solving about making a change until importance is at least, you know, reasonably high. And so if, let's say, the kid's importance is, he doesn't get it, you know, no, he doesn't think there's any need to change. And yet for the grandmother, it is. Well, you might meet actually with the grandmother by herself or focus on working with her because she's more ready to make some changes, and that would be what she brings in the house and things like that. Anyway, somebody else wanted to chime in, and then we'll check back with Lisa. Actually, first let me do that. Let me check back with Lisa how we're doing.
Yeah, no, that's good. I jotted down some of those ideas. I'll see. I don't know. I think he helps her, so I don't know if she come by herself.
Mm-hmm.
He helps her. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's interesting that he helps her. So I'm noticing something that could be affirmed there, and that is that they're a team. Apparently, they rely on each other. They're a team.
Oh, good.
Cool.
One. I like that.
Right? And if they're a team and then you affirm that, and then they're thinking, oh, yeah, we are a team, then it may be easier to get a conversation going about how they, as a team, are going to work for his health.
I think I was trying to get there, but I didn't phrase it like that. How you worded that.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Somebody else wanted to chime in.
I was just going to add that for a young male of 13, they are also looking at their potential at age 15.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way to get to the ball field or to the court or to their peer level is through good health. And to drive the importance of where you want to be at 15, there's steps that have to be made to get there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what are you willing to do?
And this kid may have enough emotional maturity and executive functioning to do that thinking. And he may not. You know,
yeah.
That would be an assessment on Lisa's part, you know, to sort of see if she does a bit of that, you know, where do you want to be, you know, when you're in high school, what do you, want to be able to do, you know, et cetera. And if he grabs onto that, great. That's some of the important stuff for him.
Yeah.
And some kids don't do that very well. Yeah.
And since he is pre-diabetic, it's maybe most commonly is that he's not active enough to start with.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Physical activity may be a real important part of it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Somebody's bone break. Or somebody has put us on hold. Hang on a minute. Let me see if I can figure out who that is. And I think I figured out who it is. Yep. I just muted them. Okay. So what else have we got here? We've got a few more minutes. Questions, fun stuff to contribute.
Hi, Molly.
Yes.
Hi, my name's Kristen. I'm actually new to this call. I'm a renal dietitian with Fresenius in San Diego, California.
Great, welcome.
Thank you. So, you know, in our practice, we see a lot of patients. We do a lot of lab reviews, which is our main responsibility, phosphorus, potassium, and the like. But they don't heavily train us in MI, so I'm trying to do my own. Education.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the biggest issues I find is I have good relationships with my patients and they feel very comfortable talking to me, but when I reach like ambivalence, I guess you'd call it,
mm-hmm.
I kind of hit a wall and I'm not sure what I should say next, so I don't know if there's some resources or if anyone has any suggestions on how to help the process along. And
mm-hmm. When you say, Kristen, that you run into ambivalence, how does it manifest itself?
It's usually, like, for example, if a patient has a really high phosphorus, and they simply just, they either don't know what it is they're eating or, like, I've already tried all this, I'm taking my binders, it's not working, I've tried changing my diet, that's not working. Therefore, it's just they kind of go, whatever, it is what it is.
Sort of a resignation?
Yeah.
Well, I have a few thoughts for you. You might want to review the tip I've written, tip number 55, which is specifically on ambivalence. That's in volume 3 of the practice workbook. And if you don't happen to have that, email me and I'll send you a copy of that chapter. Another thought I have, though, has to do with summaries. Because particularly if you know these people pretty well, and they've, you know, you've been talking with them and they know about the phosphorus and they know, and they're yes-butting you and there's just all sorts of stuff that they're saying. One way to do it is to do a pretty comprehensive summary that primarily includes whatever change talk is in there. Before I forget, I'll mention in practice workbook number 3, tip number 72 has a lot of stuff on summarizing and some format. Because it sounds like you're getting a fair amount of maybe a little change talk, but also some sustained talk, some I don't want to change, why bother type of stuff thrown in there. And if you pull together a summary that has just a teeny bit of the sustained talk, but then goes into pulling the threads together of whatever change talk you hear, and then powerful summaries always end up with a key question at the end, something like, how does this all sound to you? Or, what does this all mean to you, or what do you see moving forward at this point? Mm-hmm. Gently putting it back on them. How does that sound, Kristen?
It's worth a try.
Yeah? It's an example of not working so hard. In other words, sort of gently, respectfully putting it back on them, but because it is up to them anyway, right?
Yeah, totally. And that's why I don't tend to pester. And I'm sure, like, every time the doctor comes around and repeats the same thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Take your medicine, don't eat phosphorus, you know, they probably reach out and strangle them.
Right. Yeah, and you can roll with a little bit of that. You know, you can say, I hear you. You get tired of hearing this stuff over and over again. I get it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you circle back around to anything that you've heard that they care about, whether it's, you know, their grandkids or that X, Y, or Z hurts or whatever, and then put it back on them, because chances are they know what they're needing to do. Now, if they really don't know, if they say, I'm really puzzled, I don't know why these labs are this way,
mm-hmm.
then you can offer, you can say, let's you and I look at that together. Let's see. And then you probably know what open-ended questions to ask to elicit some things. Or you can even start with asking them, well, let's see, you've been around this place for a while. You know a lot of this stuff. Tell me what your best guess is.
Mm-hmm.
Put it back on them. And then if they still insist, if you think you do know the reason that the labs are off, you could ask permission to give your opinion. Basically, you don't want to dump it on them. And it sounds like you're, Kristen, you're wanting to be very respectful and not confrontative. So you'd say, well, you know, I do have a thought, you know, based on what you've said. You know, I'm thinking I might have a clue. Would you be interested in hearing it? And then once they say yes, then toss in maybe with sort of neutral language such as, I do find that a lot of my patients who do X, Y, and Z, that would do X, Y, and Z is what this client is doing, right? Clients who do X, Y, and Z, their labs tend to go up. So I'm sort of wondering if that's part of what's going on. Or something like that. How does that sound, Kristen?
Better. More helpful than.
Yeah. I have a lot of respect for renal dietitians. I really do. You're in a tough situation because your clients are in a tough situation.
Right.
They're captives while they're sitting there on the dialysis machine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's tough.
Very.
And you can do a bunch of acknowledging that. Yeah.
Very.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure. Well, we're about out of time. Anybody have any final thing they want to say or ask? Okie dokie. Well, I may see some of you at upcoming trainings, and do stay in touch. I'll schedule one of these again in 3 or 4 months from now, and we'll get together again and see what we can come up with. You all take care, and for those of you who are where it's warm, I'm jealous because I'm in the Northeast, and we've had a cold winter so far. Okay, take care, everybody.
Thank you.